And so I feel like there's a lot of people who've like laced up their boots and like, yo, we have work to do. We got to hit the ground running. And it's important. It's important to be able to step back and enjoy the beauty from that is, you know, that's, you know, other souls are creating. There's a scene in Selma, and I think it was like maybe in the first 20 minutes. And I feel like the whole movie, Martin, you know, the guy that was playing Martin Luther King just looked tired the whole time. You can imagine. He felt like he had the burden of that, you know, like just generations on his shoulders, you know. And he calls a friend on the phone who is a singer. He's like, I just need to hear the voice of the Lord. And she just sings to him over the phone. You know, and like, I just thought, how beautiful is that?
You're listening to Upside Down Podcast. This is Lindsay Wallace.
And I'm Kayla Craig.
I'm Patricia Taylor.
And I'm Alisa Molina. Upside Down Podcast is an ecumenical conversation at the intersection of justice, spirituality, and culture.
And we've created this space with you in mind.
So join us for unscripted conversations on God's Upside Down Kingdom.
This is Upside Down Podcast. I'm your host today, Alisa Molina, and I'm here with co-host Patty Taylor. Show notes for today's episode can be found on Instagram at Upside Down Podcast. A quick shout out to our Patreon community who keeps this podcast free of ads. We are proud to be a 100% listener-funded podcast. And we'll be launching, by the way, a few new fun things for our patrons. So now is a great time to join. If you'd like to become a patron, please visit patreon.com/upsidedownpodcast or visit upsidedownpodcast.com and click give in the upper right-hand corner. Beauty can help evoke wonder and delight, which are foundations of a life of wisdom and inquiry. Beauty involves apprehending unity, harmony, proportion, wholeness, and radiance. It often manifests itself in simplicity and purity, especially in math and science. Often, beauty has a type of pre-rational or striking force upon the soul. For instance, when one witnesses a spectacular sunset or the face of one's beloved. Beauty can be understood as a type of inner radiance or shine coming from a thing that is well ordered to its state of being or is true to its nature or form. I found this quote in a piece by Daniel Guernsey, and it got me thinking about the necessity of beauty, not the superficial kind, the godly kind, the kind that points us back to the divine. It also got me thinking of the things that have stood in the gap and given words to the stirrings of my heavy heart. The beautiful things that remind me that God is God and He is here. And so I am so excited that Patty and I get to speak about beauty with our guest today, because his music has often been the beauty that has stood in that gap. And so today we welcome Ike Nandolo. He is the son of a Nigerian immigrant, and he is an artist. He's a musician. He has released 3 singles in the summer of 2018, Guiding Light, Your Table, and Follow Me, all of which are featured on his 3rd LP, Shine, released on September 17, 2018. And so, Ike, we are so glad that you are here. How are you doing?
Good. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Why don't you fill us in just a little bit about like who you are and where you live, stuff like that. The basics.
Sure. So yeah, I live in Phoenix, Arizona, and I've lived here for several years, definitely more than a decade. And I'm originally from Columbia, Missouri, but I moved here when I was about 19 and lived in Nashville, Dallas for a short stint, but Phoenix has definitely been where I've been for the bulk of my adult life. And I am a worship leader and a songwriter. I've been doing that for probably about 10 years or so. And I came into this kind of in a weird backwards way, because I was in youth ministry for a while, and then along the side I was just kind of playing guitar because I always wanted to, and just kind of led into the worship realm. And and then I released my first record through a publisher out in Oregon, a record label out in Oregon, in 2009. And yeah, since I was already kind of traveling, doing stuff before then, but 2009 is kind of when I started to devote a lot more time, like full time, to music and traveling and recording and whatnot. So yeah, I live in Phoenix. I'm married. I have a beautiful wife and a beautiful baby who is 10 months old, or will be 10 months old very soon. And yeah, I think I feel like that's the basics.
Yeah, that covers it, I think. Yeah, so the way that I was exposed to Ike's music is because, like, when we have meetings, like when we talk as co-hosts, we just kind of throw out, like, this would be like an amazing person to talk to, and I really love this about, you know. And so this, when we had the meeting this summer, I was just like, man, like, you know, there are, I would love to pick Ike's brain on like a ton of stuff. But the way that I came to know about you was like long time. So what was your first album? When was that released?
Oh yeah, that was 2009. And that was, it was called We Are the Beggars. It might've been 2008 or nine. I can't remember, but one of those, it was a long time ago.
Right. So Patty, so I was in youth ministry here in Austin, and there was this big thing that the diocese here, that the church here did, where they have an event in the spring where it's like an outdoor Catholic Woodstock. I mean, I guess that's the best way, because they invite like bands to come out and play, and the kids camp, and you know, we just spend a lot of time outdoors, and it's just a ton of fun. And that year, Ike was the performer, and that it was your first album. So that was like the first, and like I bought the album there at, they called it Godstock. I bought the album.
I was like, what is this?
Yes, it was Godstock. You're like, I did what? You were like in the middle of nowhere, really.
Yes.
Right? It's pretty outside of Texas, like outside of Austin, Texas, where you were when you came. Right. And so I've also been to several youth conferences that you guys have played at. So,
Oh, that's fantastic. I didn't realize you had that history there of listening to
it. Yeah, music. Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
I'm more of a newer fan, but I'm glad that, you know.
Right. The newer fan part of it, and this is kind of where like the entirety of the podcast co-host kind of comes in, is your work with Common Hymnal. So can you, like, that we know, I know nothing about, like how that happened, what Common Hymnal is about. So like, can you explain to everybody what that is?
For sure. Yeah. So so Common Hymnal is a group of artists and creatives and musicians and who kind of came together to sing songs and to worship God. And I would say in a new and different and refreshing way that doesn't necessarily focus on the main line kind of evangelical, you know, Christian worship sound, but more centered around justice. And I actually was kind of brought into the fold pretty late. So I think it was 2017. They was when Common Hymnal started recording all the music that you're seeing out now. But that was like, I think in August 2017, and maybe 2018. But I met this guy Malcolm Duplessis and Brittany Spencer. Malcolm is kind of the guy that gathered this group of people together, and Brittany is also a very integral part of this group. She's a singer and songwriter, and she actually did a takeover as well. And we met through a mutual friend of ours in Nashville. And I think Malcolm had heard one of my songs for my newest record, Shine, and he liked it. And so, it was 2018 then. Yeah. And he was like, I loved the message, and I think you'd really fit in with his group. We're doing this, you know, week long recording session at this, you know, big Airbnb in the woods outside of Nashville. Are you down? I'm like, yeah, dope. I'm down. You know,
that's incredible.
And it was a really beautiful conversation, just meeting Malcolm and Brittany, and just really feeling, I think there's for me, kind of feeling outside of the Christian kind of mainline thing. I guess I don't know how to describe that, but just feeling a little homeless. And, talking with Malcolm and Brittany that day, I mean, there's tears several times, just feeling like I had someone who understood, And so I, he was like, you want to come? I'm like, I would love to. I'll clean toilets. I'll cook food. I don't care. It's just great. So it was funny. My wife came up with me and she was like, it's like a musician summer camp up here. I'm like, yeah. It was great. And we were there for a week and practiced and rehearsed the songs and then took a couple nights to record all the songs live. And yeah, so I kind of got brought in pretty late. So I didn't have a song that I had written on the project, but there was a song on there, How Much Longer, and it was part of the catalog that they that Malcolm was like, hey, we think we might want you to sing like a verse maybe or sing on it. You know, we want you to be a part of it. I'm like, yeah, of course. So I learned it. And then, you know, we get there. He's like, no, actually, we're going to have you sing it. We're going to have you lead it and sing. I'm like, ah. And, then, you know, the guy that wrote it, you know, he was there. And he was actually a guy that I knew before that I'd written with, a singer-songwriter that I'd written with before. But I'm like, are you sure? He's like, no. Yeah, he was super cool. And so, yeah, I sing, you know, like I'm super new to the group, you know, kind of Johnny come lately. But I they were like, yeah, here you go. Sing this song. So that's kind of how we that's how I got introduced. And brought into the fold. So, yeah. Also, you're going to hear my baby in the background.
Just, oh, that's fantastic.
It's okay. Yeah, it's that we time love him. Did you give him a popsicle, by the way? I saw that in your Insta stories.
I like those popsicles. I like those popsicles. And I can't eat it. I can't eat them around him because
he took them.
Like, feed the baby. Yeah. Give him everything.
I wanted to say. He already had spaghetti, but.
Yeah, well, you know, that's dessert.
Exactly.
So this is Patty here, and I was just thinking of the word you use, refreshing, and that is is what I feel. That's what I just go to this place where I feel refreshed when I hear Common Hymnals music and your music and your songs, because they're Alisa, you actually had used this terminology, achingly beautiful. Like there's something that's so achingly beautiful. When I hear How Much Longer in particular, it's like, I feel like it's like a battle cry, like a war cry, but also it's so heartbreaking that we still are crying out. It's so heartbreaking that we're still like saying, please, like hear our cries. And so why is it that, you know, the beauty that we find in everything from art to music to poetry is such a necessity during these times?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's such a crazy thing. You know, who would have thunk that we would all be in this situation where we're stuck at home? And not only that, you're kind of watching in some senses, you're watching relationships deteriorate. You're watching our country deteriorate in some ways. And there's so much ugliness. And, you know, turn on the TV, hop on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, especially, you know, like you see just ugliness, ugliness from people, from leaders. And just art is so needed right now. And which is also kind of a crappy thing because there's a lot of art that's not being able to make because of the restrictions on movement and all that stuff. But at the same time, there's a lot of people who are taking this time and taking this opportunity to really create beautiful things. And we need it, man. Like it's, you know, I'm on a shared Spotify playlist with a couple of friends from Nashville. And we just dump songs in there that we, that are beautiful and that we love. And just to be able to hear, I don't know, just to hear people's hearts and souls. I, you know, I love music, obviously, as a musician. I love film and movies and, you know, good TV and, you know, beautiful paintings. I love all that stuff. And especially right now, because not only there's a lot of ugliness, but also I think because of that ugliness, we're seeing that we have a lot of work to do. I know I've been feeling that call, like looking out and like, man, I've got a lot of work to do. We've got it's almost like you look up, it's like a mountain of just, can we ever get over this mountain? You know, it's this thing that we've been fighting for so long. And so I feel like there's a lot of people who've like laced up their boots and like, yo, we have work to do. We got to hit the ground running. And it's important to be able to step back and enjoy the beauty from that is, you know, that's you know, other souls are creating. There's a scene in Selma, and I think it was like maybe in the first 20 minutes. And I feel like the whole movie, the guy that was playing Martin Luther King just looked tired the whole time. You can imagine. He felt like he had the burden of that, you know, like just generations on his shoulders, you know. And he calls a friend on the phone who is a singer. He's like, I just need to hear the voice of the Lord. And she just sings to him over the phone. You know, like, I just thought, how beautiful is that? You know, like this titan of a man who gave everything for justice. And he was a human being, you know, he smoked, he needed some time away. He laughed with friends, and to be encouraged, he called up a friend to have her sing on the phone to him. You know, like, I just thought, like, man, art really plays a vital role in our lives, but in the worker's life, especially those who are working for change and activism. And music can also be a conduit for that as well. Art can be a conduit for that as well.
Absolutely. And that's like, as you're talking, I think that it's like almost twofold. It's like, on the one hand, it gives you respite, but on the other hand, sometimes, and I think how much longer that has been, sometimes you just don't really have adequate words,
right,
for the lament.
Yes.
And you can't really say out or articulate the groanings.
Right.
And sometimes a lot of times I'm finding, especially in this season, a lot of times art is what helps us kind of put out into the world, make that into the reality. I was somewhere in your stories, you put a photo of the wall out. I think it's outside of your house. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that and how like what that meant for you. Because when it started raining, like, I was in a straight up panic.
You and me both. Yeah.
Is it?
It is.
Yeah. Tell everybody what it is.
So I was coming home driving home from New Mexico. My wife is from New Mexico, and so we went over there for a wedding. Her sister was getting married, and she was staying a little bit longer with family, and so I was coming back, and I was just driving back, and I was talking to my sister, and you know, it was just feeling just low and feeling a little defeated and discouraged, for sure, discouraged. And you know, we're just kind of talking, and I pull onto my street. It's dark, it's nighttime. I pull onto my street, and it's like my driveway, and like there's a wall. My neighbor has a wall around his yard, and it just faces the street. And the street's not super busy, but it is kind of busy. So anyway, I pull into the street, and it looked like someone was like painting something on that wall, because there was like a light, you know, they had like a little bright light pointing to him. I'm like, oh, what's going on? And as I get closer, I see that there was like a chalk mural of it was kind of like not filled in, but it was of George Floyd holding his daughter. And I was blown away, because I'm just talking about how I feel like I've been let down and discouraged. And he, you know, here on my street, you know, this mural is going up, you know, of George Floyd. So I stop, and it's my neighbor, his name is Dave, and it was his sister, Angela, who's an artist, and she wanted to go down to the protests downtown Phoenix, but she, her leg or her foot was broken. So she's like, I just want to do something. And she, you know, I'm an artist. So she thought about, she lives in Chandler, which is like, you know, a ways away from us. Not a ways away, it's like 10 minutes, but it's like, you know, a little ways away. She just wanted to do a mural on her driveway. He's like, no, why don't you come to this, come and do it on my wall. Tons of people pass by it. Come do it. So they were putting up this mural, and I'm like, just moved to tears. I'm telling my sister about it. She's on the phone with me, and we're both kind of like just in awe. And Dave comes up to me. He's like, is this okay? I'm like, oh man, you have no idea what this has done for me. Like, this has been this has been huge. It's been, it was, this is huge for me to see this. And it's literally, you know, right across the street from my house. And so, yeah, they finished the mural of George and his daughter, and then put up, and then right next to it, Black Lives Matter. And just really beautiful, these flowers. And she's an amazing artist. Her name is Angela Nimmo, N-I-M-M-O. And yeah, it really has become like, I can't even tell you how much it means to me to wake up every single morning and see that, you know. That's what I see when I go to work. That's what I see when I wake up. And it's been huge. So yeah.
And it's like gorgeous.
Gorgeous. It's beautiful. Gorgeous, really. It's beautiful. Yeah.
And I think just, you know, people who have gifts like that, putting the gifts out in the world like that, right, and totally being like balm for like very weary souls.
Right. Absolutely.
Out here.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. And I think, and not knowing too, like just not knowing that you needed that. Mm-hmm. Like how many people mm-hmm. have seen it now and are driving by and just have that hope renewed, yes, because of something that this individual said, I feel the need to do this.
Yes.
And I think that's such a beautiful thing that you, like, you can say tangibly, like, I was discouraged, I was down, and this revived,
yes,
me. And there are so many more stories that you'll never hear, mm-hmm, but you know that it's out there because you're putting your talent and your gifts to use.
Yes.
Yet in that, do you ever feel this pressure? Like what happens when you get tired? What happens when you know you've laced those shoes up, like you said, to climb that mountain and you just need a break?
Yeah.
Like do you feel that guilt, and or do you feel like, oh, like I've got to keep going? You know, what do you do when you need to tap out?
Oh, it's a great question. Well, I post less. and I see less,
yes,
just for a little bit, you know. And I, mm-hmm, I, you know, I'll say this, you know, there's this question that pops up on Twitter a lot, like, what radicalized you? And I'm always like, mm-hmm, Trayvon, it didn't radicalize me, it re-radicalized me. This was something that from a young age I was very aware of, racism, and I had always had a mind for activism, a heart for activism, you know, read the biography of Malcolm X over and over and over again, read everything from Martin Luther King and Stokely Carmichael and, fought, you know, Fred Hampton, you know, like all these like titans, you know, and learned as much as I could in a system that didn't really want to teach you about this stuff. And then, you know, fast forward, you know, as I'm in ministry, I'm kind of just living this ministry world, which is a very white world that's oblivious to racism and systemic racism. And so I remember Trayvon Martin, and I remember thinking, because when I was 17, gosh, I'm forgetting his name. He's the African immigrant who got shot holding a wallet in New York. I remember when that happened, not feeling like shocked or anything. It was just like this can't, just the outrage, and knowing that this is a systemic thing. And so I had an artist friend draw like a little Black Power fist, and then I just put the facts and, you know, how we're fed up, and I made a little flyer and I posted it all over my school. And the principal, one of the principals, who was actually my defensive lineman coach when I played football, he would take him down and I would follow him from a distance and then just keep posting them back up. And this was always my heart. And then kind of ministry happened and took me away from that fire, and getting re-radicalized by the death of Trayvon Martin, and then getting fully radicalized with Mike Brown. And finally, I, you know, speaking up and then being severely disappointed at the responses I got, the lack of responses, I think,
yeah,
and the lack of, or the silence was even worse. And a lot of relationships, I think, were started to be severed. And you know, it's in that time, like I'm you know, I'm going hard, I'm just posting, I'm trying to do what I can, and then, you know, and then I start to feel guilty because I'm getting run down, I'm getting tired. And what I do is I just distance, you know, like you know, it was on Facebook was the medium, it just became too much, you know, moved away from Facebook. Twitter became a thing. I had to take, you know, last year took a big old break from Twitter because I was just in this constant rage cycle. And it's not, it's just where we are, you know, like there are reasons every day to be enraged. And, but at some point I thought for myself, I need to take a step back and yeah, you know, I'm here, you know, I've been here, but also I need a chance to just chill. And so for me, it's like not, you know, just not seeing things, you know, like it's like, okay, I just need to take a step back. Or if I see, you know, like instead of going on Twitter where I see a thing and then I see the responses and I get worked up, it's like, okay, this happened. Let me acknowledge this. And then let me just breathe for a second. You know, and right now in my family, just be like, okay, it's just time to just be with the family and post videos of my son. And I think I'm in that moment right now where I'm exhausted, you know, because this is also too, because this is not like a momentary thing. I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but I've been here, you know, like I'm not going anywhere. Right. So I need, mm-hmm. I need, strength, you know, for the journey. Cause it's not going away, but you do need a time to just step back. And it's beautiful now. Like, you know, I've just been home all day and, you know, I think, you know, my son was doing something cute and just looking at my wife. I'm like, this is the life. This is the life. Yeah, I need this, you know?
And I think that one of the powerful things that have come out of just at least the recentness of all this is joy as resistance, right? Yes. Or beauty as resistance, rest. We talked about the NAT ministry at the end of last season.
Right.
And just this idea that you are resisting by doing the things that have historically been withheld.
Yes, right.
Or at least attempted to be withheld, right? So like, if you tap out and you enjoy a sunset, that you are resisting. Yes. You're resisting the grind culture, like NAT ministry calls it. And there's so much value to that, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You need it. It's needed.
Yeah, it's needed. And it also, for me, at least points to, I don't know if you can relate to this, Ike, but a place of trusting, you know, a place of trusting that if I take a step back, then the work continues because it's not all about me. Yes. I contribute. I'm a contributor to this. And I know just when it feels it's so deeply ingrained inside of you, like when it's just so deep. Like James Baldwin, you know, is famously quoted for saying to be a Negro in this country and to be relatively conscious is to be in a rage almost all the time. Yeah. You know, when you just in every moment, when you can point to something, when you can say this is not okay. And so there's this sense of urgency and to combat that with this sense of trusting that I am not the only one. And there is actually, we might think it's, you know, a solo act, but in fact, it's a chorus that is all lining up and being a part of this. And I just used this analogy earlier today. As a matter of fact, I heard it somewhere else. I'm definitely not the originator of this, but especially doing justice work and anything really, when you view it as a chorus and you hear that beautiful note that the choir sings and they sustain it for such a long time and the audience is in awe and they're like, wow, like how did they hold that note? And they don't know that the choir members, and I sang in a choir, so this was something really relatable for me, was that there are members dropping out and then they're coming back in seamlessly. They're catching their breath. They're coming back in. They're catching their breath. They're coming back in. And the other members of the choir are always covering for them. So it stays seamless.
Yes.
And I think that's just such a beauty in knowing that, you know, we can partner together in this work.
Yeah.
And that there's a refreshing that needs to take place with us and with the Lord in order for us to be able to continue doing what he's calling us to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
For sure. And I think to take it even just like one step further, it also gives us the opportunity to reconnect to God and to maybe sometimes ask him like, where are you and where is this plan of yours here? But also just to trust that he is. So that has been one of the things that I've struggled with in anti-racism work, is that there can be a tendency to kind of get swept up and swept away from my connection to God because some of it is like very secular. And so I've had to, I don't know if you'll identify with this or not, Ike, but there's not a whole lot of stuff out there as far as the Catholic Church goes for like where you find theology or letters or academic work or any of that when it comes to anti-racism. Mm. And so for a long time, I was feeling like I was like doing something that was like not okay, or that was sneaking around. Mm-hmm. You know, I just never felt, I always went to the church for knowledge and for prayer, all the ways I needed to be led and fed. Mm-hmm. I went to the church, and then I was doing all this work, and it was sometimes in evangelical circles, but a lot of it was in secular circles. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I needed my church, and I needed God to, I needed to see where it all fit right. in. And I do think that, you know, the return to beauty is important because it returns us to the creator of beauty, the creator of man, the creator who says like we are all made in his image and likeness, and that, and ultimately, fundamentally, we're working for the dignity of the human person.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so I did notice, like, because your first album was when I first started like mm-hmm. engaging in your work, I did notice that shift from you being like on your platforms, from you being like an artist and a musician, to then it expanding into this anti-racism work, to be kind of vocal, like a yes. vocal leader, which especially as a Latina Catholic, I was like starving for. Right. So when you were out there and you were like starting to really be vocal, it was like, oh my, is there anybody, like, are there others out there? So like, what led you to, or how did you kind of power through that shift?
Well, like I said, it was something that I think it was like just in my blood and my bones. I always tell this story, you know, my mom, I think I get it from my mom, you know, like I have a younger brother, a younger sister, and then it was my mom and my dad when I was younger. And we were coming back from Illinois. We're driving back from Illinois to Missouri, and you know, in between this stretch, we're going from small town to small town and literally passing through tons of small towns, you know. And so you just kind of learn how to, you know, mind your P's and Q's essentially. And but you know, we're a black family, you know, or a family of kids. And so we stop at this gas station, and you know, I'm a kid, I'm 7 or 8 maybe, but we're you know, we're getting snacks and looking for snacks or whatever, and don't really notice much. But my mom, I do notice that there was a cop in there, but we get in the car, my mom and my dad are talking, my mom is furious, she's just like, I'm gonna go tell him. And my dad's like, she goes, leave it alone. I'm like, she's like, no, they need to know. And so I'm like, oh, what's about to happen? You know, so my mom gets out of the car, marches into this gas station. And she's like, I know what you guys did. You think because you saw this black family, we're a family, that we're going to come in. And you call the cop, and the clerk is like, no, that's not true. And there's like, I didn't know. I was just talking to my mom recently. She, there wasn't just one cop, literally like 3 or 4 cops like descended on this gas station. And so my mom just went off on the cops, on the gas station attendant, and I'm just sitting there just like loving it, just like, heck yes. And
straight up eating your popcorn, straight that you just
eating
got
my popcorn. I was a whole meme. And so you know, we get back in the car, and I just remember just feeling like, my mom's not a huge person, she's a very small woman, but she just seemed like she was 10 feet tall, you know, like, and she had fire in her eyes. And I feel like that's that, you know, her kind of fire runs in my bones. And so, but I tell you what, it's one thing to have those moments, right, where you can like, I'm going to call this out right now, right here. But when you're constantly doing it and you feel like you're being ignored, whispered about, I know that for sure. Like, you know, friends who are in those circles, you know, like, who, you know, they feel comfortable talking, is like, well, they're, you know, people keep asking. He's like, just, you know, like I had a friend, he's like, just so you know, like people are talking and they're like, what's wrong with Ike, you know? And like they would never say that to my face, but you know, and losing gigs, you know, I have receipts for that, you know, like stuff that I could, you know, blast someone on Twitter, but I don't, you know, because I'm a Christian, I'm trying to get right with Jesus. But you know, like these are things that I'm like, that this is draining, man. Like, and I power through because I'm like, I know it's right. And I'm like you, like I was like, yeah, I've been Catholic my whole life, and I'm just like severely disappointed in the response to justice. Like we should be, you know, you see the pictures of the Martin Luther King marching, and you know, every once in a while you see clergy there with them, you know, priests, and I, you know, I think we like to idealize things, you know. It's just like, it's like, it's to why, you know, Trump can run on a Make America Great Again. You know, you hark it up, this nostalgia, like, well, remember when America was great? I'm like, what are you even talking about? But I think we even do that in you know, with justice movements and anti-racism movements. You know, the civil rights movement was this idealized, this is how you protest, guys. This is how you do it. And look, the church was there with them. Look at these priests marching with them. But in reality, the reality is as much as we've sanitized and whitewashed Martin Luther King, he was at the time of his death, one of the most hated men in America. His approval rating was abysmal. And, you know, the reality is this is not, you know, whether it's, you know, in 63, whether it's in 75 or whether it's now, like this, it's not going to be glamorous. It's going to be hard work. And you are going to lose things, you know, like I haven't lost my life, you know, I haven't, you know, but I have lost money. You know, I could just stay quiet. I could just not say those things. But I refuse.
I actually had this conversation with some Catholic women. We were doing a book study on this book that a Catholic priest wrote about the Catholic Church and racism. And he did not pull any punches. He made it a point to say that we have been abysmal at this. And, but I did say to them that we're here now. Like it's our job. It's not anybody else's job to do a better job at standing up and refusing to sit down. And he talked a lot about like the paternalism involved in both Catholic and evangelical spaces on racism. Like, you know, like we just need to treat our brothers and sisters better. You know, we just need to be kind, and you know, it's just very paternalistic, and it's very like an individual morality take, like appealing to the morality of different people versus saying, nah, you know what, we got a massive systemic issue here. Like it's systems that we need to talk about, not like we don't need to be appealing to individuals here. And so it is lonely, and it is tiring, and it is really important to take a break and to reconnect, I think, to those things.
Kind of going back to what Patty said, we're talking about, you know, the choir thing. And, you know, I love that approach. You know, I love that approach because, you know, when it seemed like it was resting on one person, right? We're talking about with Dr. King or, you know, whoever, like that person becomes an easy target. The movement can be dispersed if that person is discredited or removed or whatever. And what I love, I guess, in this moment is that there isn't one central person that we're, you know, everyone is looking to. There's tons of voices who are refusing to, you know, to stay quiet. And that is, that's beautiful. That is amazing. To see that. And it is, it allows us to, you know, for some, you know, for me to take a break, like you said, Patty, I'm like, it's okay. The work is still being done. Let me step back for a little bit. And knowing that there is like a cloud of witnesses essentially who are doing the work. So
a cloud of witnesses. I really love that. And while there are most certainly pitfalls of social media, especially in the way many interactions occur, and it cannot possibly show everything, you're definitely right that a lot more is being exposed, and part of the beauty of social media is having a tangible way of knowing that we are not alone as we work towards progress, that there are others who are joining in this work, and we're doing it together.
Absolutely. Can I, like, I want to circle back just to one thing that you said real quickly about your mom. Recently, you've had some Black women take over your platform.
Yep.
Other people have done that. But why was that? Why was that important to you? Like, why was that a thing that you felt that you wanted to do?
Yeah, I think it's important because as a Black man, you know, I learned about justice and fighting from what's right, not necessarily from my dad, and this is not disparaging on my dad, but I learned it from my mom. And the crappy thing about history is you don't see the women, specifically the Black women who propped up and fought and did the work, the hard work for justice and for civil rights and for anti-racism. And so, you know, when I saw, you know, this, you know, when that, that people were using their platforms to amplify, the voices of Black people, I thought it is important for me as a Black man, to make sure that I'm doing everything I can to amplify the voices of Black women. I think that's, I mean, it's just that, I think, you know, like it was so important for me, that it just not be, perceived that men are out here doing this. And I don't think people are delusional to that right now, who are doing the work and in the streets, but I wanted to make sure that I did everything that I could. And especially since I feel like people who might follow me, especially in the Catholic world, is very low on Black voices, let alone,
right,
you know,
right,
you know, the voices of Black women. So that was it. You know, I think maybe it stems from my mom, you know, that she was the one that instilled that love of justice in me. So
did you get a positive reception to that, do you think?
I did. Yeah, I did. I'll say this. I do get the naysayers and all that stuff, but mostly people just whisper behind their backs and keep it off my page. But really there's definitely some negativity, but for the most part, it was overwhelmingly positive. And I was, you know, watching the comments and people were just really encouraged. They learned a lot. Yeah.
Having the opportunity to take over your page was tremendous for me. So thank you. I've been wanting to say that. And too often Black women get erased. And that's just something that I'm always present with. And it really meant a lot to me that you have, you know, given your platform over to Black women. And I do hope that you'll continue that. Because I think it's really a wonderful opportunity for us to learn from one another.
So that's been one of the things, actually, as a Catholic that I've loved to see, is that whole Instagram takeover thing meant that I met, like quote unquote, met a whole lot of Latina and Black mm-hmm. Catholic women that I had no idea. Because like you said, I don't think it's just in Catholic spaces, but there are a lot of Christian spaces that are very whitewashed.
Yes.
And the Catholic Church, even though we are like universal, like that definitely is a feeling, like all the media, everything. Right. That was really, really awesome to see that you guys, those of you who gave over your platforms, were able to allow us, the rest of us,
yes,
to meet and to be exposed to some like incredible human beings that are out there and just don't get a whole lot of play.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So like last little bit, when we were looking at your pages and mm-hmm. Going through all your stuff, I noticed on your link tree something that alluded to Village Lights yes. music. So what's that?
So me and two other worship leaders, Catholic worship leader friends of mine, Sarah Kroger and Ricky Vasquez, we did a worship event, the three of us together, several years ago. And it was one of my most amazing moments of worship I've ever had. And I had always wanted to do like some a collective thing with other Catholic artists, and hadn't, you know, didn't know who. I knew I've been friends with Sarah and Ricky for a while, so but they had also been talking about it together between the two of them. So when we, the three of us, did this worship night together, it just kind of clicked. And so since that time, that was in 2017, we have been working to try to make this more of a reality, and talking about it, writing together. Obviously life is, you know, busy, but we've kind of kicked it into higher gear in the past year and a half, and written several songs. And so, yeah, it is a collective of worship artists. The idea of village, I don't think is a very common thing for people who live here in the States, who grew up here. For me, as a Nigerian kid, you know, that word was used all the time, the idea of a village. And my mom talks about the village all the time. She always said it was this place where everyone was welcome. And, you know, at nighttime, we would all gather around the fire, and we would sing songs, and we would eat. And even though, it's dark outside, I never felt afraid. I felt whole. I felt accepted. And, you know, we don't necessarily want it to be about the three of us, but we want to create a space where others can feel welcome. And, you know, obviously our vision was to gather people in a room and just to worship, to eat, to talk about everything, to welcome everyone. And obviously in this time of quarantine and distance and COVID, it's been hard, but we're still kind of working as much as we can behind the scenes. I think that describes it.
Yeah, awesome. And that sounds really exciting. And we're definitely at the end in the show notes, we're going to link to all of your work. Your latest album, Shine, is like a literally a social justice battle cry, song after song after song. Mm. And so it's definitely like a must have in people's ears. I wonder, just lastly, if you would talk about to circle back to beauty, what does it feel like knowing that, like, your voice, like, let's say in the common hymnal song, How Much Longer, like, yeah, your voice gives that balm to other people? Like, what does that feel like?
Oh, I don't know. It's like, it's humbling. I think that's what it is. It's humbling, you know, like that moment, when we recorded that song, was really special. It was really, it was just very, very powerful. And I think that song, I remember hearing it, and, you know, I'm listening through all the songs. Me and my wife are listening through all the songs, all the demos before I got to the actual week of recording, and just weeping over all the songs time after time. And, How Much Longer is one of those things. 'Cause I think How Much Longer, I think, is because those words and that sentiment is on my heart. You know, it's been on my heart, you know? And so I feel like, even though I didn't write the song, I felt ownership of it, because I'm like, yes, absolutely. These are the words that my soul sings, you know? And I think it was convincing, because I felt like I was singing a song that was meant for me. And
it definitely was.
Yeah.
You know, it's that weird thing, like the mural outside of your house. Right. Like God is faithful, and he really does prove over and over that he's with us, and he's for us, and he's for this work.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Okay. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for
we are
me.
Definitely going to encourage everybody to follow you on all the social platforms and social media platforms, and to buy all the things and buy all the swag and all that stuff, and pray for us. And we will definitely be praying for you and your ministry.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Well, friends, we hope you feel refreshed and inspired to seek some beauty in the world today. Ike's music would be a great place to start, and his information will be found in our show notes. You can always learn more at upsidedownpodcast.com, or find us at Upside Down Podcast on Instagram. We would also love for you to join the Upside Down Together listener group on Facebook to process through episodes with the lens of God's upside down kingdom. You can also help us continue to engage topics about faith and justice by rating and reviewing Upside Down Podcast on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. It takes just 2 seconds to give us a 5-star rating and just a minute to leave a review. This is a free and easy way to support our podcast. Reviews help other people find us, and of course, we always appreciate seeing you share our podcast episodes with friends and your online communities. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And we'll be back next time with more on the necessities.
Upside Down Podcast is created and hosted by Kayla Craig, Lindsay Wallace, Alisa Molina, and Patricia Taylor. Episodes are edited by Tess Malone and Johnny Craig. Show notes are by Lana Smith. Learn more at UpsideDownPodcast.com. Thanks for listening.